because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind. And it's a special edition of Rewind because I'm going to welcome Mike Duffy, Executive Director of the Republican Party of Wisconsin. Thank you. I think the Friday after Super Tuesday is a very interesting day for you to come in. So we're going to take
Certainly
a few minutes just talking to you. But give us the short version of your bio, because this is your first time on Wisconsin Eye.
Well, thank you for having me here this morning. Pleased to be talking to you about Wisconsin politics. I'm a Wisconsin native, grew up in Wauwatosa. Went to school here at the UW and graduated in 2001 when I went to Washington. Had the pleasure of interning in the White House. And since then, I have been working on both Senate and presidential campaigns and working in the federal government. Most recently, I spent the last 6 years working in the Pentagon. And the opportunity came up to come back to Wisconsin and help Republicans win the state once and for all in a presidential year. And couldn't turn that opportunity down, so I'm glad to be here.
Well, thank you. Thanks for joining us on Wisconsin Eye. JR and I are going to take turns asking you questions, but I get to go first.
Great.
So, is Donald Trump going to be the nominee of your party, Mike?
Well, we have to see. You know, only 30% of the delegates have been awarded so far. We've got a long primary process, and Wisconsin has yet to register its voice in the primary election. But I believe, and we heard it on stage last night, that whoever the nominee is, all of the candidates have pledged to consolidate behind the nominee and make sure that we defeat Hillary Clinton in November.
I got to ask about that, because this week we saw Ron Johnson, Paul Ryan, and Scott Walker in various ways criticize Trump's comments. Paul Ryan made the most forcefully talking about we have to come out against bias and bigotry in this party. But they all stop short of saying, I won't vote for this guy or support this guy in November. Does it undercut the criticism or last night's message from Rubio and Cruz and Kasich that this guy's not fit to be the nominee if they're all saying, but in the end, we'll support him? How does that work?
Well, I mean, we're in the middle of a contested primary, and during that process, a lot of things are said. And I think this is not the first time that we've had a contested primary in the Republican Party. But as I said, we've got a long way to go, and I think we'll end up seeing everybody unify behind our nominee come November.
Are you at the party planning as if Donald Trump will be your nominee? Because you have to begin locking in some assumptions, Mike.
Well, I'm not sure that we do. You know, really our job at the state party is to focus on making sure that the state is prepared from a campaign apparatus for whoever that nominee is. As I said earlier, Wisconsin hasn't even voted yet in the primary, and so we need to get through that first. But we have a great operation. We have 6 offices open across the state. We have enthusiastic volunteers that are part of this organization that that Scott Walker has built as the governor, and we hope to ensure that organization is applied to everything from the presidential race to the Senate race to the 8th congressional district and all the competitive campaigns that we'll have in the state this year.
Preparing for the fall, do you worry that the acrimony in the presidential race will trickle down ballot, or that the post-mortem Ryan's previous order after 2012 was all about attracting new voters? I don't get the impression, talking to folks, that they see this primary attracting new voters the Republican Party yet. Is that a worry at this point?
Well, I think the data tells another story, JR. I mean, the fact is that the states that have voted in the Republican primary across the country so far, we have 40% greater turnout than we did in 2012 when we also had a contested primary. So I think that, whether it's Republicans coming out in mass or new people coming out to vote for the Republican Party, we are seeing enthusiasm on the Republican side. But when it comes to the down ballot tickets, I think that we saw in 2012, we were able to elect a Republican majority in the legislature, and many of the down ballot folks outperform the top of the ticket because they're running independently on their record. And we have a strong record of conservative reform in the state, and the legislature can tout that when they go back to their legislative district. So I think it's important to just kind of keep those separate when we're looking at how we're going to perform in November.
But do you think, whether the surge is Trump voters coming in or whatnot, do you think the message, though, with Hispanic voters, who Reince identified as a key constituency to broaden the base, is that message going to resonate with them? Are you attracting Hispanic voters who you will need in swing states this fall?
Well, you know, we're focused at the party on attracting a whole broad coalition of voters. And I think, you know, if in fact we get Senator Rubio, Senator Cruz, consolidating behind whoever the nominee is, I mean, those are Hispanic surrogates that could help us outreach to that community. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll be focused, whoever the nominee is, on reaching out to as many constituencies as we can here in the state of Wisconsin.
With Ohio and Michigan still to vote, Mike, will Wisconsin be relevant on April 5 when we hold our presidential primary?
I believe so. I mean, there's passion on all sides of the Republican Party right now. And, you know, in previous years, you might have suggested that the primary was over at this point, but it continues to continue to be competitive. Whether folks decide that it's over or not after Florida and Ohio, I think the folks that have an opinion here in Wisconsin will register their vote on April 5th in support of their candidate.
So I want to ask you a geeky delegate question that explain to the audience. So we've talked about this primary process so far where we have proportional awarding of delegates. We have big winner-take-alls coming up in Ohio and Florida, I believe, Nebraska. Explain how we're different. We don't do it that way.
Sure. No, that's correct. We do not do it that way. Wisconsin has 42 delegates to the National Convention, 3 delegates per congressional district, and the nominee that wins that congressional district is awarded, and those delegates are bound to vote for that nominee at the convention. In addition to that, we have 18 statewide delegates. Those folks are bound by who wins the popular vote in the entire state. And so those 42 would then cast their vote accordingly at the National Convention.
The reason I ask that is we're kind of in this sweet spot in the calendar where there's nothing before us for a week or two and nothing for a week after. So will we be a big prize delegate-wise or more of a prize for momentum and message, do you think, for whoever comes in and wins the state?
I think a lot of that will depend upon the results over the next several weeks. But I do think that anytime you have an individual state, there's a symbolic momentum mm-hmm. factor there. And so I expect that we'll be a hub of activity for the 2 weeks prior to our primary. And I think that's a great thing for our state and our voters. They're getting a chance to get up close and personal dialogue with the candidates before they register their votes on primary day.
I want to get even more wonkier than JR. The 2010 election for governor, the Democratic turnout for Barrett then surged 61% to 2012, the election for president. The Republican turnout, same database, Walker. Walker turnout, the Republican turnout for Walker compared to the Romney turnout only went up 25%. So the Dem turnout went up 61% statewide, the Republican 25.
Sure.
Are you afraid if you have a split party? Speaker Voss is working for Rubio. Joint Finance Chairman Nygren, the Assembly Majority Leader, doesn't like Trump. Do numbers like this with a higher Democratic turnout threaten to wash out people like Senator Johnson and many of your leggies, GOP leggies?
So call me Wonk. So I actually want to dispel the myth, I think, that Wisconsin, I was part of the 2008 race here as John McCain's state director. I saw firsthand the effect that President Obama, much to my dismay, was able to have on the electorate here in Wisconsin. He turned out between 1.6 and 1.7 million folks to vote for him in 2008. And in 2012, it was slightly less, but similar, still above 1.6. 1.62. It's easy to forget that the last time Obama was not on the ticket, the presidential race in Wisconsin was decided by 12,000 votes, and the time before that by 5,000 votes. So the big question here is that Obama factor something that really, I believe it was. I believe it was what pushed the Democrats to be able to turn out more folks. we're seeing across the country now, Hillary Clinton just does not have the capability to do that on the Democratic side. So am I concerned? Well, we are going to work as hard as we can to turn out as many folks as we can for whoever a Republican nominee is. But I think that the Obama factor won't be on the ticket this year, and I think that will help when it comes to making Republicans competitive in the presidential year.
Quick follow-up. For three straight Marquette polls, Senator Johnson has been polling 12 or 13% behind Russ Feingold. So you can argue 1 month is a nominally a outlier. Three straight months. How worried are you about the reelection of Senator Johnson? And what's going to allow him to stay in that job?
Not worried at all. I'll tell you why. A couple reasons. Number one, everybody, if anybody's paying attention to the electoral process right now, it's the presidential primary, not the Senate race. And so second reason I'm not worried is, late as June 2012, Tommy Thompson was beating Tammy Baldwin by 12 points in the Marquette poll. So I believe when we have a chance to bring the case to the electorate and they're paying attention in the summer and the fall, they'll see the contrast between Ron Johnson as a citizen legislature and Russ Feingold as a Washington insider. And I think that's the place where we close that gap and Ron Johnson wins on Election Day.
So for the next 8-9 months, people like you are going to brag to people like us about your ground game, how strong it is, and what it does. Can you explain for our viewers, what is the Republican ground game? What are you guys doing on your weekends? Like, what do these offices do? What are the people work for you do, volunteers do?
Certainly. So we have just, and this started back when I first started in campaign politics in 2004, was Milwaukee's field director for George W. Bush. And I think it's actually kind of interesting if you watch the trajectory of presidential votes in the state of Wisconsin from 1988 to about I think it was 1980 through 1996. It hovered around 2.2 million. And then in 2000, it went up to 2.6. And then in 2004, it went up to around 3 million, and it's hovered at 3 million. I think that's really where we brought back campaign politics at the field level, at the ground game, where we harnessed the passionate support of our folks on the ground and channeled that energy to get them to turn voters out, both throughout persuade support throughout the campaign and turn voters out on Election Day. And so we've, Governor Walker, under his leadership, and Chairman Courtney have made a commitment that we're going to continue year-round, even in off-election years, presence across the state. So we have six offices open, fully staffed. Those folks are calling voters and IDing where they support, on who they support on the candidates, what are the issues that are important to them. That all helps us know who our supporters are and who we need to persuade to our candidate throughout the election and come Election Day. And so it's a lot of relationship building, it's a lot of supporter identification, it's a lot of getting folks involved that really want to have an influence on the election, and we're providing an outlet for them.
Why is Governor Walker's approval rating below 40%, Mike?
Well, you know, Governor Walker's not on the ballot right now, and I think his focus and his support is helping to get Ron Johnson reelected. I think Governor Walker, you know, has can point to the fact that he won a blue state 3 times in 4 years. He's brought big, bold reforms, and so I'm confident that his poll numbers will be restored when it's time for him to face the electorate.
Do you think that
again
approval rating of less than 40% reflects the fact that, according to the MU poll, many Wisconsin voters didn't want him to run for president?
You know, I'm not sure what the polling says. I know that Governor Walker's working hard to touch base with his constituents around the state, attending listening sessions, continuing to build an agenda of conservative reform within the state. I think he'll continue to do that, and I think you'll see those numbers rebound.
You know, considering you guys have one U.S. Senate seat, 5 of the 8 congressional seats, majority in the Supreme Court, every constitutional officer but Secretary of State, 19 seats in the Senate and 63 in the Assembly, have you maxed out in Wisconsin? Because it's a presidential year, will you, just because of the electorate, give up something this fall?
I don't think so. I mean, we are committed to electing conservative leaders who will enact our values. And so, you know, we're, of course, because we have hold so many seats in the legislature and the state government and the federal government, we'll be naturally playing defense in a lot of cases. But I think we'll also be playing offense because, as we said earlier, we have a record. We have a record of success that we can depend upon and make the case to the voters. And I think they'll continue to reward us. And this is an opportunity. I think, you know, one of the things I wanted to do in being a part of this team was, because we'd come so close in past presidential years but hadn't quite won, I think that would sort of be the elusive accomplishment from a Republican Party standpoint, is winning, whether it's the state electoral votes for the Republican nominee or electing a statewide official, in this case re-electing Ron Johnson during a presidential year. I think it's achievable, and I think we'll see that realized in November.
Okay, one more question each because of the time. My question is this: why is the Republican Party helping Justice Bradley fundraise, Mike?
The Republican Party believes that a Supreme Court justice has a role to interpret the law free of political influence and free and not modify the law from the bench. And Justice Bradley is somebody who embodies that more so than her opponent. So to the extent that we're engaged in the race to help educate voters on that, you know, we're going to do that.
But it's a nonpartisan office.
That's correct. And so, I mean, the Republicans aren't barred from participating in it. And Justice Bradley has, you know, is running as a nonpartisan candidate.
Chair, last question.
I want to ask quick, kind of building on that a little bit. The Supreme Court race this spring, obviously you guys were involved. We talk a lot about pendulums in politics, and they swing back and forth. Will the Supreme Court outcome give you any indication if there's a pendulum swinging back from Republicans toward the middle or wherever it might be going? Is that a first kind of indicator, if you will, about what will happen in November here?
Well, I think there's a lot of factors that will influence that race. I mean, the competitiveness of the presidential primary on either side. There's the turnout of folks on either side of the aisle could be influenced by a number of things. So I'm not necessarily going to use it as a barometer to whether or not we can succeed in the fall, you know, we're committed to doing what we can to help Justice Bradley get elected.
So you can say the words President Trump, Mr. Duffy?
If he's our nominee, I will advocate for getting behind him across the state of Wisconsin.
Okay, Mike, thanks. Please stay with us, would you?
I will be glad to. Thank you.
Next, I want to go to President Obama in Milwaukee yesterday. Why was he there? Because Milwaukee signed up 39,000 more under the Affordable Care Act. And let's listen to a segment of what he said in Milwaukee, because he talks about some of your Republican friends. So let's listen to that for a bit.
So here's what we did. We started a competition between 20 communities across America, from Philadelphia to Long Beach, from Atlanta to Denver, to see which city could get more of its uninsured neighbors to get covered. I'm pretty proud of my own hometown. Chicago outperformed every other competitor except one. Milwaukee came out on top. You get bragging rights this year. You got nearly 90,000 people to sign up. That's enough to fill Lambeau Field. Still have a big tailgating party with a lot of folks outside. And those tailgaters wouldn't have to worry, because Obamacare covers indigestion from too many brats. And by the way, Milwaukee, while you worked your tails off to cover enough folks to fill Lambeau Field, your governor still refuses to expand Medicaid in this state. And we could cover another 21,000 Wisconsinites with a stroke of his pen. Which, by the way, actually would save money. He's denying Wisconsinites their ticket to health insurance, and it's political. Your senior senator won't tell you that if he gets his way and it repeals Obamacare, millions of working families would see their insurance premiums spike. The leader of the Republicans in Congress, who lives just south of here, won't tell you that if he got his way and repeals Obamacare, millions of women would go back to paying higher premiums just because they're women. Millions of seniors would see the price of their prescription drugs shoot up. Now, they'll tell you, no, those are the good parts. We'd keep those. Well, if you add it all up,
That's the Affordable Care Act. Why are you trying to repeal it?
Mike, the president took the name of Governor Walker and Senator Johnson and the Speaker of the House, Ryan, a little bit in political vein. I want to give you a chance to respond to that.
Sure. Well, I didn't hear as part of the competition any factors with regard to the restriction of choice, the increase of premiums, or the suppression of jobs that's brought about by Obamacare. So, I think it would do the president good to look at all the impacts that Obamacare has on its implementation within the state of Wisconsin. But, Governor Walker elected to not choose the Medicaid expansion because he didn't want the strings that were attached to taking the federal money, and yet he was able to ensure that Wisconsinites stayed covered. And so I think personally that's the best path forward, and I think Wisconsinites have rewarded him for that.
J.R., do you see in the president's visit to Milwaukee, was he trying to help find gold, or was he anything for Abley, or was it?
I don't recall Feingold being there, for one.
Okay, thanks.
But this is more of a kind of a continue to prosecute the case of Obamacare, if you will. So, hey, this is his legacy at this point. He's 10 months out from being out of office, so it's all about legacy and kind of reminding people what he's accomplished in his mind, what's good. He's trying to focus on the positives of the Affordable Care Act in his mind. Obviously, it's a chance for Republicans to relitigate the case, whether it's Brad Schimmel or Governor Walker saying that this is a bad deal for taxpayers, for choice, et cetera. So it's kind of, there's no clear winner, I don't think, in the debate of Obamacare in Wisconsin. It's never going to resolve. It's been a fairly split electorate. Look at the Marquette numbers. They've been mid-40s, pro and con, kind of go up and down a little bit here and there. But it's not going to be an argument won anytime soon around here.
But what strikes me, JR, is there a little bit of a tale of two Wisconsins in the Capitol? You have the governor and GOP legge saying, read our lips, no expansion under the ACA, whereas Milwaukee, they're up to, the president said, 90,000 people covered by that. So do we have a little bit of a tale of two Wisconsins?
Well, it's interesting, some of the messages out of both sides are tailored toward their base. For Republicans, it's Obamacare is bad, we don't want the money, it's not a reliable source of income. For Democrats, is you can accept the money, expand the number of people you're covering. If you look at polls, the question of taking the money is popular. But WMC in particular did a great job in 2014 with the messaging on that by turning around from a question about taking federal money to cover more people into an expansion of Obamacare, and hammered Assembly candidates in particular about that issue in 2014 and made it a strength for Republicans and a weakness for Democrats. So there's a way to message that for your base to make it work, if you will, regardless of people in Capitol are talking about it.
Okay, and let's note finally what the Attorney General Brad Schimmel said about the Obamacare he issued a release while the president was in Milwaukee. Significant aspects of Obamacare are unlawful. While President Obama is celebrating what he perceives as a measure of success of his health care program, I'm fighting vigorously against the attack on religious liberty, unlawful mandates, fees, and restrictions it imposes on taxpayers, employers in our state. Do I hear you saying amen, Mr. Duffy? J.R., you must admit, it was a curious tweet. This is my hand before I signed 58 bills. The governor signed, he signed 104. He'll probably be signing more today. Mm-hmm. So, your reaction when you saw this is my hand before I signed the bills?
The phenomenon of social media that you can do something like that. There's actually now a Twitter feed, I think Walker's hand, that exists.
There is.
So, but the governor is, if you look at his Twitter feed since he came out the presidential trail, he's trying to show people he's back. He's reengaged. He tweets sunsets from the executive residence. He tweets when he goes, stops, or gets ham and rolls after church on Sunday. I mean, it's part of the Scott Walker reengaging with the Wisconsin electorate post-presidential race. And it helps him reconnect in some ways. So now, granted, the hand by itself may have been an odd choice, but this is part of what Walker's trying to do overall.
Okay. And let's just look at six bills that were among the 104. We don't know what he's going to sign today. Strip searches will be allowed on inmates being held less than 12 hours. County executives cannot also serve in the legislature. Sex offenders must be released into the county where the crime occurred. There are new shoreline zoning standards. That bill is so complex, you and I don't understand it, JR. Give landlords new rights to evict tenants if criminal activity is suspected. Have you ever tweeted your hand, Mr. Duff?
No, I have not.
You have not? Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay, new topic. Newspapers reported that there is a federal grand jury looking into potential civil rights violations. The U.S. Attorney for Madison The Department of Justice, my office in Washington, are reviewing all materials, all the news articles, all the reports generated by Wisconsin DOJ, and then a determination will be made if a pattern in practice, a civil lawsuit and a civil investigation is warranted. Continuing bad news for the Walker administration, JR?
That's why John Lynchers was brought in to try and clean this mess up. He is a former DOJ secretary. He's been there before. He went before a confirmation hearing this week and said, I want to restore trust in the agency. That will be a long process for him to pull off. But if they can get things cleaned up, it'll be a step forward. Now, the question is going to be like any political problem. What did you know? When did you know it? And what did you do about it? And that's going to be the ongoing problem for the Walker administration of what else comes out, whether shoe drops, and what might the feds now find in their investigation that makes them look bad.
Are you afraid for any of your GOP leggies fallout from the Lincoln Hills, Mike?
I'm not. I think we've got a much broader agenda that we can point to of success, and I think we'll be successful in November.
Okay, JR, let's go to your politics
sure.
stock picks.
So, rising Barack Obama, and we've kind of covered the Affordable Care Act discussion is not going to be solved anytime soon. But any president who comes to Wisconsin gets a run of good headlines, leads the 10 o'clock news. I mean, you are basically the story of the day. He got all kinds of positive PR. And oh, by the way, look at the Marquette poll. It's interesting that his numbers have flipped back into positive territory for the first time in several months. So he's got above 50% job approval rating. Now, the question kind of becomes why? You know, has anything really happened in the federal scene that makes him look better than he did the month before and the 5 months before that? A couple of theories I've heard this week. One, the messiness of both presidential campaigns makes him look above the fray in some ways. He looks more statesmanlike because these guys are talking about hand size last night, or you know, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton have their issues. So in some ways, you are above the fray. Two, maybe this whole thing about the Supreme Court is playing, you know, giving him a little bit of a boost because there's this debate: should you fill the seat? Should even hear a nominee? Maybe that helps him. And there's all kinds of like speculation from people like us talking about it, but it's not as hard to pin down what for sure. But at least a year out, less than a year from leaving office, he looks okay in Wisconsin right now for job approval rating.
Okay, you've got any PS? No. Oh, thank you. You've got the president rising mixed.
Chris Abele. So, we talked after the primary that Chris Abele's got to make this election not a referendum on him, but a choice between him and Chris Larson. This week, TV ad was the first chance to do that, and he goes right after Chris Larson, tries to tie him to Scott Walker, to big banks, and that somehow he's just kind of like sellout kind of politician type. Now, what's interesting is if anybody knows Chris Larson, that's a hard connection to make. He's not a friend of Scott Walker in any way, shape, or form. So in talking to some folks in Milwaukee, they're kind of like, they don't get the ad really. Like, why is this your first choice? Because if you're Abele, if you look at the presidential primaries coming up in April and who might turn out in the election for that, you're kind of going, okay, my best bet is to get moderates, maybe some moderate Dems and some Republicans to vote for me and beat Larson that way. Well, if you're in the Greenfield, West Dallas, Tulsa area, you kind of like Scott Walker. You know, he's a little more of his base of Milwaukee County. Is that ad going to work, that you're knocking Walker and you want me to go vote for you? I'm not sure about that. But Abele's people say, look, Walker's numbers are so bad. The banks are so disliked. There's a reason Donald Trump is doing well. It's because even Republicans are unhappy with big business, big banks. That's the message of the ad. Now, I'm not sure where it's going, where it's going to push. But the bottom line from the spot, though, is Abele's down, not just in that primary from falling 2 points behind Larson, but his polling must show he's down to doing this right out of the gate in that primary.
Mike, you grew up in Tulsa?
I did.
So here's my question.
Yeah.
Suburban Republicans have any reason to help Chris Abele get another term?
Well, I agree with JR. I mean, I don't understand the race to the left because, Scott Walker proved that Republicans do have an influence in that county when it comes to electing the county executive. And it'll be an interesting choice they'll be faced with, but I don't expect any support.
And if you were in Tulsa, you'd vote for?
I might leave that blank.
And that's actually a great note, because that's one thing I heard too about this ad is, if you're going to vote for Donald Trump, who do you pick in the county executive's race? Who's your guy? Well, what's your appeal to you? A Cruz voter is not likely going to be an Abele or Larson voter. Same with a Rubio. So what do you do? Or if you're a Republican in those suburbs, go, you know what? My property tax bill is more important than sitting that one out, and that's enough to get me to vote for Abele over Larson because I fear him more. And what he might do. I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
But that's
fascinating.
Fun
and
stuff.
Falling JR?
You know, a couple agencies having some rough spell in the Walker administration. This one, now you see this black list of people who not to respond to, one of whom now is running for the assembly, by the way. But it's just kind of not been the best run at times of the agency. A little bit of turmoil over there, constant churning of people and questions and that kind of thing.
So. A reorg in the DNR, so just a lot of churn in DNR?
Yes. You know, let's be honest. A lot of administrations, you kind of go through this first term and you're gangbusters, everything you want to do. Second term, you start hitting some problems sometimes. This might be part of that kind of second term rough spot, you will, with the Walker administration, some of these agencies.
Okay. Final word, Mr. Duffy, is it going to be a GOP year?
It's going to be a GOP year, that's right. First time in 32 years, we'll see Wisconsin turn red in the presidential year.
Mike Duffy, thanks very much.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And next week in this chair, Martha Lanning, State Democratic Chair. Thank you.